And a very good morning from a very wet Salford in Greater Manchester. How you doing? It's Sunday morning, the 29th of September 2019. This is Sunday View with myself, Richie Allen. Hope you're in good form, having a good weekend. I hope you are. It's been dreadful the last couple of days since Friday, so it's been impossible to do anything. It's been bucketing it down in Greater Manchester for the best part of 3 days. Not good. Anyway, Sunday View, going to take a look through the front pages of the newspapers here in the UK and the talk shows as well this morning. We'll hear some of those, or we'll hear one or two snippets from those, and there are some interesting stories inside the papers as well. This is your Sunday View. Good to be with you.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Lovely stuff. There should be a theme tune playing now, but it's not playing. It's one of those mornings is what it is. The theme tune should be playing. But one or two computers are acting very lazy this morning. They're a bit slow on the uptake. We don't need a theme tune. We can survive without one. At least I think we can. Right, so lots to talk about. I'm going to just jump straight into it. We are live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester on richieallen.co.uk. Tune in radio as well. That's tunein.com, the TuneIn app, and multiple other platforms, triggerwarning.tv as well. All right. And you can tweet the programme. My Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show, but then I think you knew that. Anyway, when I look through the front pages, the Sunday Telegraph, Johnson, I will build 40 new hospitals. Boris Johnson is in Manchester. The Conservative Party's annual conference begins in Manchester today. And we'll hear from him in a few minutes because he was on the Andrew Marr show earlier. But before that, we'll hear from his Health Secretary Matt Hancock. So what's the story? I will build 40 new hospitals. Johnson is going to pledge £13 billion for 40 new hospitals to replace outdated buildings and equipment. And I'm not too sure about this story. But Johnson did give an interview to the Sunday Telegraph as the Tory party conference begins. He said the plan would begin with a £2.7 billion cash injection for 6 hospitals over the next 5 years. As I said, his health secretary, Matt Hancock, was on Sky News this morning with Sophie Ridge, and he put more meat on the bones of this story.
Well, we're going to start the largest hospital building programme in a generation. We've announced that we're going to be rebuilding 40 hospitals right across the country, and of course recruiting the people who are going to work in them. We care deeply about making sure that the NHS is there for you and for your family and is sustainable into the long term, and so we're putting £13 billion extra additional money into this plan. We can find the money. It's not coming through PFI or any of those sorts of schemes that have been used in the past. We can find the money because the economy is strong, and this means that we can rebuild our NHS. So, you know, if you're in one of those hospitals in Harlow or in Whips Cross in London, for instance, where, you know, the doctors find it hard to get around the patient because the building's too small, or where the roof's leaking and dripping, then we're going to rebuild those hospitals. The 6 that will start straight away, the rest will get the we'll start the development work right now.
So I want to get into some of the specifics of this announcement. You were saying that the 6 hospitals that you're going to start straight away, that you've kind of already earmarked that money from the Treasury for. So are these new hospitals, or are they just rebuilding hospitals that are already there?
Yes, in many cases they are rebuilding hospitals that have been crumbling, essentially.
So it's a load of bollocks, basically.
Crumbling, essentially. You know, take Whips Cross, which the Prime Minister visited a couple of weeks ago. That hospital is almost 100 years old. It's totally inappropriate for modern care.
And as it the needs... father in Whips Cross Hospital.
Well, I understood his frustration, you know, as did the PM. And it was, you know, we couldn't say at the time, but we're going to rebuild this hospital and also employ the extra people who are needed in to run the services.
Yeah, it's nonsense. Matt Hancock speaking to Sophie Ridge earlier today. It is nonsense. It's very vague. Is this promise, this plan to build 40 hospitals in the future? And there's a lot of criticism of that on newspaper, excuse me, on mid-morning talk programs on radio and television today, it's nonsense. It's a big sexy headline about building 40 hospitals, but it isn't really true. The substance doesn't really support the big headline and the big proclamations. Matt Hancock, the Sunday Times, three stories on the front page of the Sunday Times of interest. Our Curie told friends of affair with Boris. This is some story, you might have been following this, about a former girlfriend of Boris Johnson's, a model whom is alleged to have received favours from him during his time as Mayor of London, investment and all of that. Other story, PM apologises to Queen after court verdict, and also on the front page of the Times. Now FBI investigates Prince Andrew's links to Epstein. That's interesting, but I'm not sure how true that is. I wouldn't get excited. I wouldn't get very optimistic about the possibility that Prince Andrew will be under any real investigation. But we'll watch that one closely. That's the Sunday Times. The Observer leads with PM whipping up riot fears to avoid Brexit extension. The Observer leads with the Brexit spokesman for the Labour Party, Keir Starmer. He's accused Johnson of whipping up fears of riots and deaths so that he can invoke emergency powers and avoid extending the UK's EU membership beyond October 31st. That's in The Observer. The Mail on Sunday leads with Number 10 probes remain MPs foreign collusion. Number 10 probes remain MPs foreign collusion. This is an exclusive, at least according to The Mail on Sunday. The Mail on Sunday alleges that the government is investigating alleged links between foreign governments and the MPs behind the legislation passed this month that could force Johnson to delay Brexit beyond October 31st. Put very simply, there are allegations that those who want to prevent the UK leaving on October 31st are actually being advised and being briefed by foreign governments. I'll give you the story, according to the Mail on Sunday, more details. MPs, including former Cabinet Minister Oliver Letwin, have been accused of receiving help drafting the Surrender Act bill. And that help allegedly came from members of the French government and the European Union. The Benn Act, which Boris Johnson has contentiously dubbed the Surrender Act, passed earlier this month, as you know, and it states explicitly that if Boris Johnson doesn't get a deal by the end of the next European Union summit on October 18th, then he must write to Brussels asking for a delay to Brexit, a delay until January 31st next year. Okay? Do you get that? So the allegation this morning is that the Surrender Act or the Benn Act was drafted with advice from members of the French government and the European Union. It's basically tantamount to accusations of treachery, of treason. And it's all over the place this morning. So under the rebel plan, right, Johnson's got to go to the next EU summit on October 18th. If he doesn't get a deal there, he's got to write to Brussels asking for an extension until January 31st. And the claims this morning are that those behind the Benn Act or the Surrender Act or the Surrender Bill have been colluding with members of the French government. That's it. Very big claim. Whether it's backed up by any evidence or not, I don't know. I couldn't tell you, dear listener. So that's on the front page of the Mail on Sunday today. The Sunday Express leads with Boris would win election in jail. There's a headline for you. There's a headline, bit melodramatic. The story quotes in the Express Sir Bernard Ingham, who was a press secretary for Margaret Thatcher. He said Johnson would win a landslide election victory even if he was in prison, as long as he doesn't weaken his stance, as long as Boris Johnson sticks to his guns. Why these comments about prison? Well, allegedly Johnson has been threatened with prison if he didn't ask for that extension to the Brexit deadline of October 31st. Johnson says no matter what, whether I do agree a deal with the European Union or whether I don't, I will be leaving with no deal. The Star on Sunday leads with, hilariously, the headline, Gunther, Jens blanked me for 15 years. This is Friends actor Michael Tyler, who played Gunther in Friends, who worked behind the bar at the coffee shop. Central Park. And apparently, when they wrapped the final show, he's been blanked by Jennifer Aniston, who hasn't spoken to him in all these years. What a story! In The Star on Sunday. Maybe Jenna's woke, maybe. Maybe the line between what is real and what isn't real has been blurred so much for Jennifer Aniston that she believes that she is Rachel, and she believes that she was sexually harassed by Gunther, maybe. I have no idea. What a story on The Star on Sunday. And that's where we leave the front pages. But there are some interesting stuff inside. There are some interesting things inside the papers. We'll get to those in a minute. It is 11 minutes past 11, 11:11 on October, on September even, the 29th, 2019. This is Sunday View. So, the Tory party conference in Manchester, which is at the old GMEX. I don't know what it's called now. It's not called a GMEX anymore. Many a great concert was witnessed, was seen, was heard by yours truly at the old GMEX over the years. But the Conservative Party is in town for their annual conference. And because of that, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson was on with Andrew Marr on BBC One today. The first question from Andrew Marr was, did you know Joe Cox? What's the context? Well, I'll give you the context. Joe Cox was a Labour MP for Batley and Spen. And she was murdered by Thomas Mayer, allegedly. Allegedly. Her name was brought up by, when I say allegedly, I'm pretty sure Joe Cox was murdered. But whether Thomas Mayer did it or not, I don't know. He was convicted of it, and he'll never see the light of day again. But there are many problems with his conviction. I won't get into it today, I've gotten into it before. So Joe Cox was murdered only a few days before the referendum in 2016. And her name was brought up by hysterical Labour MPs like Paula Sheriff and Jess Phillips. They allege in the present sense, in the present tense, the toxic language is emboldening attacks on members of Parliament. This is bullshit, but don't let the truth get in the way of a good hysterical rant, right? They say toxic language puts them at risk on the streets of the UK. When she said this to Johnson, Johnson said humbug. So this morning, Andrew Marr led with question number one to Boris Johnson. Did you know Joe Cox? And Johnson's response was,
I don't believe that I ever met her, no. But can I just say on the issue, because I didn't serve in Parliament much during that period, I was running London. But on the issue of threats to MPs, which I think you've just been discussing with your press review panel, let's be in no doubt that the threats to MPs, the abuse of MPs, particularly female MPs, is absolutely deplorable.
It shouldn't matter a damn whether the MP is male or female. Abuse is abuse. It doesn't make it any worse if it's thrown at a female MP. I would have said, really, threatening to kill somebody, it's not any more potent, depending on the sex or the gender even, of the person receiving the abuse. But anyway.
And something that we do a great deal in Parliament and as a government to try to counteract and to give MPs the security that they deserve. But things, admittedly, at the moment, are very tough. And there is a great deal of abuse being directed at everybody. And it's particularly reprehensible when it seems to be directed at female MPs.
No, you can't have it both ways. You can't talk about equality. You know, equal rights. And if you say that, it's particularly bad or even more offensive or even more worrying if it's directed at female MPs. You can't have it. Your cake and eat it. I'm sorry, you can't.
MPs.
So when Paula Sheriff, the Labour MP, who's a friend of Joe Cox, raised the subject of death threats being made against her in the House of Commons, you described that as humbug.
Well, that's not true. That's not quite right. If I can just explain what I...
I've got the quote here.
You're right that I used that word. Mm-hmm. But what I was referring to, Andrew, I want to make a very important distinction between that issue of threats and abuse directed at MPs, which mm-hmm. is totally unacceptable and which we have to prevent, and what I think is the legitimate use of old, tried and trusted metaphors to describe certain parliamentary acts or indeed events in politics. And if you cannot use a metaphor like surrender to describe the Surrender Act, then in my view, you are impoverishing the language and diminishing parliamentary debate.
No, I'm not.
That was the point I was making. And if I can just explain why I feel so strongly about that, can I just break in for one second?
Break in for 1 second. Marr doesn't want to allow him to put into context what he was actually saying. Now, you know, I don't have any time for Boris Johnson. Do I have to repeat it? But he wasn't saying that it was humbug. Joe Cox's death was humbug, or that it wasn't anything to be concerned about. He said humbug in response to the behaviour of the MP Paula Sheriff. Marr won't allow him put into context what he says. Here's a little more.
Because it was very clear what was going on. She said, I've had death threats against you. You described her words as humbug.
No.
Humbug means speaking falsely.
No.
Do you think that she was speaking falsely in any way?
No, of course not.
Do you regret using that word about what she said?
No, because what I was saying...
You don't.
But what I was saying was that I think it is wrong that parliamentarians should be crowded out from using words like surrender.
She wasn't talking about that. She was talking about a death threat to her.
Well, of course. And
humbug means deceptive words.
No. Of course. And I totally... I'm just trying to beseech you to understand that there are two separate things here. And I totally get the point that Paula was making about death threats, and I loathe that kind of behaviour. What I'm trying to say, and on the, I think it's important for our viewers to understand why the Surrender Act is so
I'm going to come
pernicious.
To that later on. I promise
because,
you.
Because
but
it really
do,
is very.
Before we
damaging.
Do, I want to stick
Please.
With the real problem of threats against parliamentarians and many other people in public life. You said in the House of Commons that the best way to ensure that every parliamentarian is properly safe is to get Brexit done. That sounds quite close with agree with me. Or take the consequences.
No,
of course, he never said that. At no time... Johnson has been accused of saying this morning across the media. Commentators on Sky News, commentators on BBC Breakfast radio news programmes have alleged that Johnson is saying, back me on getting out of the European Union, back a deal or back no deal if necessary, or... You might be putting yourself in danger. At no time did Johnson insinuate that. At no time. Let's be clear about it. Regardless of what you think about politics, politicians, parties, whether you are invested in that process or not, and I'm not clearly, you can't lie about it. He's not said that at all. Right? What he said was, the best way to end all this division is to be done with it. Once and for all. Pretty clear what he said last week. Let's get rid of it. Be done with it, leave, be done with it, and go on to talk about other things. Right? But the media is playing a game here. And Marr is, well, he's wretched, isn't he?
Well, I'm afraid that's a kind of...
that's a quote.
Ridiculous. I mean, what I'm saying, and I think what most people in this country would agree...
Do you not think you're playing with
Brexit,
fire?
The Brexit discussion has been going on for far too long. And it is true... that tempers on both sides have now become inflamed. And it's very sad to see this continuing. And the best way to... Would you agree with this as well?
The country
the best
is divided
way to end this
and angry.
Is to get Brexit done on October the 31st and move the country forwards.
It went on and on like that for about 5 or 6 minutes. This whole appropriate language thing is nonsense. And it is a nonsense. I've just had a message there from Jean-Anne Crowley. Very, very well written, very well read woman. And she says, I feel... She doesn't have any sympathy for any of these politicians. She says, I feel for him, Johnson, in terms of how language has been hijacked. It has and it continues to be. Orwell did warn us, only he didn't get the half of it, says Jean-Anne, screaming with frustration here listening to that. But that's where we are now. We are kind of sitting back and watching this unfolding specter of people criminalizing English words, as Johnson said, impoverishing, he said, the language, but criminalizing the use of common words, words that have been around for hundreds of years, and falsely attaching to those words the notion that saying that word is leading to verbal and physical attacks on third parties hundreds of miles away. That's not totalitarian anymore. We don't even have a word to describe that. How utterly terrifying that is. And how the implications for it are terrifying. In terms of the implications for people, in terms of how people will begin to, not just begin, we've seen it happen. We've been seeing it happening now for the last 3, 4, 5 years. Impose upon themselves a previously unimaginable form of self-censorship. And of course, that is the reality that this discussion we are hearing now, that is the reality that is meant to come out of this discussion. That's what's meant to happen. It is meant to come about. All of these discussions about, you've got Jess Phillips saying, I'm being called fascist, I'm being called traitor. You've got an MP saying, somebody screamed at me the other day that I'm a traitor and that I've betrayed the people. And then you have others saying, well, we've got to do something about that. We've got to step in and stop that. Now, where that is meant to lead, and we're here already, I believe, or we're at the very beginning of it, is a future in which people impose upon themselves. It's staggering, really. They won't have to legislate and create laws and boundaries. People will do it to themselves. The most insidious form of censorship, somebody once said, is self-censorship. Well, I won't say that. It is preposterous to draw a conclusion that by Johnson declaring the Benn Act to be a surrender act, which it is. It is, because it gives all the power in the negotiation to the European Union. It gives the European Union a blank paper to do whatever it wants. It's preposterous to claim or to insinuate that using that word puts people at risk. It's crazy. But there's no pushback against this. Save for Johnson and Rees-Mogg and one or two others, there isn't a journalist in the country, at least not one with a very big audience anyway, in the mainstream media I'm talking about, that's actually saying, what are we doing here? Where are we going with this? Where could this end? It can only end in one way. The criminalisation of speaking ordinary words that have been in the lexicon of humanity since forever. Staggering. Incitement is, if Johnson was to say, or any of his colleagues were to say, well, these MPs who are trying to block Brexit, they could be in serious trouble on the streets of England, and they better watch their backs. That's incitement. That is giving permission to, or saying that you understand, if somebody was to run up behind an MP and punch him in the back of the head. That would be incitement. But saying that the people have been betrayed is not incitement. Calling those who have gone out of their way, have bent over backwards to ignore the result of the referendum in 2016, calling them traitors is not incitement. They are traitors. Of course they are. Betraying people. Right? It's hard to watch this, really, and maintain some modicum of calm. And Mario, to quote Mario Puzo, reasonableness. The Don was known for his reasonableness. I don't have any reasonableness when I listen to this crap. And Johnson could be a little bit more well, confrontational with people like Andrew Marr. But anyway, we'll move on from it temporarily, because there are stories in the press this morning about cancel culture and people losing jobs because of their opinions. We'll get into that in a few minutes' time. This whole appropriate language is not only nonsense, it's dangerous. So next week then, rumours abound actually over the weekend that there will be a vote of no confidence in Boris Johnson next week, which might bring an election kind of hot on the heels of it if Johnson was to lose a votion. If he was to lose a motion of no confidence. Right. All the papers this weekend saying that Jeremy Corbyn might trigger a vote of no confidence in Johnson next week. And this is because Nicola Sturgeon, the leader of the Scottish National Party, she's been hinting that the SNPs might support Corbyn to lead a minority government, right? And all of that. So, asked about this by Andrew Marr, we can hear what Boris Johnson says about no confidence motions next week.
Parliament next week is probably going to have a vote of no confidence in you. My question is a very, very strange one. Do you want to win it or do you want to lose it?
Well, you know, Andrew, there was a moment, I mean, we've twice asked the leader of the opposition to see if he'll fulfil his constitutional function and actually try to deprive me of office and form a government. He seems to be curiously reluctant.
Well, it may be coming soon now.
And if it does, then let's see. In fact, you may have seen the other night I asked MPs on, I think, not just the Labour Party, but all parties to see whether they would go ahead and do it. They looked at their shoes.
Would you like to lose a vote of no confidence because that gives you the election you are burning to fight?
I think what is definitely true is that the people in this country need to have a parliament that is devoted solely to their good and to their interests, and they need a parliament with a clear majority Conservative government to get on with a one nation agenda.
Right,
and anybody, you've spent a lot of time bashing me for my use of language. Look at what we are doing as a government.
I'm going to come on to all of those things, but that means that you need an election, and that means that actually you would quite like to lose a vote of no confidence because, thanks to the Fixed Term Parliament Act and all the rest of it, that is your short route to an election.
Well, I think the most honourable thing for the opposition to do would be to fulfil their constitutional function and to agree to have an election.
And agree
to have an election. Okay. They could do that either under the method you described or under the Fixed Term Parliament Act. And we've offered them both ways forward.
Okay. On the prospect of an election, would Johnson do any deal with Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party? Would he do any deal? Would the Conservatives get into bed, as it were, with the Brexit Party, which is enjoying, I suppose, they're kind of riding the crest of a wave, a newly formed party, of course, this year did very well in the European elections and are expected to do well in a forthcoming general election. They've got over 600 candidates ready to go in every constituency in the country. So would Johnson do a deal with Farage to push Brexit and to make sure that Brexit happens? Well, this is what he said.
Yes. Would you ever do an electoral deal with Nigel Farage?
No. And there's a good reason for that, and that is that the Conservative Party is the oldest, greatest political party in the world. It's a big, broad church, and we do deals with other parties. And we're going to deliver Brexit. We're going to deliver it on October the 31st, but we want to concentrate on the priorities of the British people.
Right, so he wouldn't do a deal with Farage. Farage will be a bit gutted, I would imagine, because he was on television this morning as well. He was on Sky News with Sophie Ridge. And he was asked the same question by Sophie Ridge about pacts with the Conservative Party.
And we've said that if Boris Johnson's party goes for a clean break, then of course we ought in those circumstances to have a non-aggression pact. And actually, if that did happen, Johnson would win a very big parliamentary majority. So the answer is yes, but only if the policy is right. Our concern, our deep concern, is that he wants to revisit and reheat Mrs. May's deal, the new European treaty, and that just would not be Brexit. In fact, that would be a surrender act.
Yeah, that's the fear is that Johnson will come back in October, on October 18th, will come back from Europe and will present a deal that's basically just a reworking of the Theresa May deal, which lost four times, which was voted down four times in the House of Commons. A deal which, in fact, was worse than staying in the European Union. That's the great fear. I think, whatever you think about Farage, I think he's on to something there. I think he's right, effectively. That's what Johnson is going to bring back. Remember, Johnson ultimately voted for Theresa May's deal, didn't he? Johnson, there's no real proof that Boris Johnson has ever been a committed opponent of the European Union or that he's been a Eurosceptic. Johnson has been pro-European most of his life. These are the things you have to deal with when you're doing these programmes, you know. It's not complicated, really, but there's so much in it. Trying to explain to people, Johnson is no committed Eurosceptic. He is no committed leaver of the European Union. I agree with those who said that the reason why Johnson jumped on the leave side of the referendum campaign back in 2016, he did it for his career, not because he's committed to it. Okay? In the same way that Jeremy Corbyn spent his entire political life fighting the European Union and trying to alert people to the tyranny of the European Union, but now Jeremy Corbyn wants a second referendum and his party will campaign to remain in the next election. They're all a bunch of liars, is a very crass way of saying it. Maybe not a very professional way, maybe it's not very professional, Richie, but they're all a bunch of liars and career politicians. Johnson went with where he thought the wind was blowing. And there are other issues, as I discussed with Neil Sanders, of course, who's written an amazing series of blogs on this. There are other issues, and those issues being many of the backers of Boris Johnson have massive financial stakes in huge amounts of money invested in the UK leaving the European Union with no deal. It's all filthy. None of them are telling the truth. And what gets lost in all of that is the central fact, that is, the European Union exists to concentrate power in the hands of a tiny group of people, to basically eviscerate sovereign states and national borders and hand power over dozens of countries to a tiny bunch of unelected men. That's what it is. That's the fact that gets lost in all of this. Johnson is really a Remainer in his heart, and Corbyn is really a Brexiteer, and no deal, and leave him with a deal, and toxic language. All of this fucking bullshit obscures a central fact that regardless of where you sit politically, whether you're on the left, on the right, in the centre, the hard left or the hard right, the European Union is a tyranny. And that's not party political. That's a fact, but that is lost. Look what's happened in the last 3 years since we've left. When has there been a discussion on national television or radio about what the European Union actually is? There's never been a panel discussion on any of the talk shows, on any of the programmes, about what the European Union actually does and how it goes about doing it. That must be kept from the people. That must be kept hidden from those who are raging up and down the country about this. Remainers remoaning and leavers screaming that we haven't actually left. Keep from them, keep hidden from them what the European Union is, because it's not party political. It's got nothing to do with party politics. It's got nothing to do with racism. It's got nothing to do with xenophobia. It is about a tiny group of people controlling the entire continent without the say-so or the express or explicit permission of people in European countries. That's what it's always been about. Right? Aye, aye, aye. Nigel Farage was asked about the language, and Sophie Ridge put it to Farage that, well, you've used a bit of choice language yourself, Mr. Farage.
You criticised overpaid pen pushers in Whitehall who are not doing a neutral job. And then you said, once Brexit is done, we'll take the knife to them. I mean, is that not, if not only a deeply inappropriate thing to say, even a dangerous thing to say?
Well, you know, you've got Labour MPs who specifically have said they would knife Jeremy Corbyn. You've got all sorts of extraordinary things.
I'm talking about what you said.
Yes, it would have been much better. It would have been better to say axe. I should have said, we'll take the axe to Whitehall, because that's a more traditional term, although you can go back to Harold Macmillan, who was known as Mac the Knife, if you wanted to. No, axe would have been a better term. But equally, you could still say to me, well, that's an aggressive phrase. Here's the point. All of this is a massive distraction that is coming from the Remainers, who want to halt the democratic process in this country. That is what is going on here. Parliament was recalled. It seemed to spend an inordinate amount of time discussing this subject, and then they all packed up early and went home.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, Labour's Shadow Education Secretary Angela Rayner is a Greater Manchester MP. On the language, she was on the Mar show just after Boris Johnson, and she talked about the language. We're going to leave Brexit after this and get into some human interest stories, which are of huge interest to you, by the way. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, and we're broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, my website, of course, richieallen.co.uk, TuneIn Radio, loads of platforms taking the programme around the world. Now, on the language, Labour's Angela Rayner, Shadow Education Secretary. She was on the Mar show just after Boris Johnson. This is what she had to say.
Well, I'm really disappointed with the Prime Minister at the moment, because he knows that he's got a direct strategy to divide our country. You know, every politician at the moment wants to get a deal, wants to get through the Brexit situation we're in, and to suggest for it in any way that we're surrendering and not wanting to do the best by our country, I think is really damaging, especially as a direct strategy from Number 10. I think he should be absolutely, utterly ashamed of himself. And I want to thank his colleagues, who are better than him, who have offered women parliamentarians across the board support when they've been getting a lot of misogynistic death threats and abuse.
The problem with the language, and there's no doubt...
It's all very hysterical, isn't it? Women MPs getting death threats and abuse and all this, all very hysterical.
The country is badly divided and very angry, is that it's on both sides. Brendan Cox has said, has made this point very directly, that it's not just the Conservative side, or indeed the Leave side of the argument, it's the other side as well. You're both at it, and it's time, he was suggesting, for both sides, including the Labour Party, to dial it down a bit.
I absolutely agree that on both sides of the debate, there is a lot of anger out there. And I think actually the important distinction is that, like I say, I acknowledge that people, even on the Conservative benches, have been extremely supportive, and our benches too. We have a responsibility now as parliamentarians to dial down that language and act responsibly. Boris Johnson, as our Prime Minister, is using Number 10 to inflame and divide our country as a direct strategy. I think that's irresponsible. I think it's wrong. Not only does that cause problems for politicians, but actually for our ordinary constituents on the street, they're feeling the wrath of all of this anger, and that must stop.
Okay, so when it comes to colleagues like David Lammy, who on this programme compared the European Research Group of Tory MPs to Nazis and then refused to apologise to that, or to Lloyd Russell Moyle, who shouted this week, these Tories are dirty, dirty, chaos-mongering people that we will have to sweep out of this country. That's the kind of language from your side of the House that you would also deplore.
Yes, I think all that language has to stop. I think we all have a responsibility over the next couple of weeks to look at making sure that our discourse and our disagreements are done in a respectful way. And what really saddens me is that Boris Johnson could have led that today. He could have said on your programme that none of that is acceptable, and he could have stopped using inflammatory language like Surrender Act. There's no Surrender Act in Parliament at the moment. All parliamentarians love our country. We want the best for our people. And I think it's completely irresponsible of him to come on your programme and not denounce that.
Yeah. But the problem with that is parliamentarians don't want the best for people. And they're not working for people. They're working for themselves and the special interest groups who put them where they are. They're not working for the people. They are traitors. And they do betray people. This woman's constituency voted to leave the European Union. They voted to leave. They didn't vote for a deal. They didn't vote for a deal or negotiations. They just voted to leave. And everything they've done since then has been to try and reverse that result and ignore it. That's betrayal. That's treachery. If the people are sovereign. But the people are not sovereign. We know this. I'm going to move on from that anyway. It's coming up for 20 minutes to the top of the air. Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. It's not inflammatory. It's not toxic to say that somebody's a traitor. It isn't. And it isn't giving license to somebody else to go and do something about that. It isn't giving license to somebody to go banging on windows and screaming through letterboxes. It isn't giving anybody license. You are responsible for you and you alone. You're not responsible for anybody else. A very dangerous thing to insinuate that my strong feelings about somebody's behaviour could lead to somebody else going to do something. That's preposterous. That is preposterous. And, you know, I said already, I'll try not to repeat myself, where that ends up. That's pre-crime stuff. You know, you as a man or a woman saying, these fuckers have betrayed us. And then a policeman knocking on your door and saying, Mickey Murphy, who lives 500 miles away, he went to his MP's constituency office and kicked in the door and threw a bag full of fucking dog excrement in the direction of the MP. That's because of you. Well, it's not. I don't know who the fuck Mickey Murphy is. I don't know what you're talking about, but that's where it goes. And it's actually not about Brexit. That is not about Brexit. That's about everything. They've wanted this for years. The elites, the hidden hand, whatever you want to call them. They've wanted to box people in. Complete compliance. Where people don't breathe a word about what it is they are witnessing unfolding in front of their eyes. That's where it is. That's where it goes. That's what the whole agenda is about. It's not about the referendum or the European Union. It's about everything. It's about complete crackdown on dissent. Eventually people will say, well, what can I fucking say then? Priti Patel, when she was the International Development Secretary. Maybe she wasn't. Was she? Foreign aid and all that. She went on her holidays to speak to the Israeli government. And business interests in Israel. Politicians. She didn't tell her own boss about it. That's treachery. There was a time when you'd be hanging from your ankles in the Tower of London. So how do you describe what Priti Patel did? What language do you use to describe that isn't toxic? If Oliver Letwin, for example, as is claimed by the Daily Mail this morning, if Letwin has been sitting down with members of the French government and other European Union governments, if he has, and I haven't seen any proof that he has, but the Daily Mail is writing about it this morning, the Mail on Sunday, claiming that the government wants it investigated, if Letwin is doing business with the French government, and if the French government is helping to draft bills that would make Brexit more difficult, how the fuck else do you describe it except treachery? I mean, if somebody... look, I'm an English graduate, right? I know you wouldn't imagine so. You wouldn't think so sometimes when I stumble sometimes over my words when I get a bit passionate. You wouldn't imagine I'm an English graduate. English and history, of course, but how do you describe it? Will somebody present with me with a dictionary and a phrase? Or point me towards phraseology? If that is true, it might not be true, in which the government owes Oliver Letwin a massive apology. But if he is talking with the French government about how to write up legislation to force Johnson to ask for an extension, well, it's treason. You're colluding with members of a foreign government against your own. What else can I say, right? But you can't say that, because if you call him a traitor, well, somebody might run up on the street and throw something at him or abuse him because of your toxic language. That's wretched. That is insane. It's almost inhuman. It's a crime against humanity to tell people you can't speak like that. You can't emote. You cannot emote in that way. What's left for the people to do? I see on Twitter this morning, there's been a lot of comments on this. People saying, don't be abusive. Debate your MPs. Where? Where do you get to debate your MP? I know for a fact that the vast majority of MPs in this country, while they do have a surgery, right? Surgery makes me laugh. They have a constituency office and they do once a week, some of them, most of them once a week, invite people to come and see them. I know that people are screened left, right and centre. They have a microscope almost up their backsides looking at them before they get face to face with their MPs. I know this. I know that people like Rebecca Long Bailey in Salford, this constituency which voted to leave. I know that irate Labour voters, I know, and I have it on good authority, cannot get a face-to-face with Rebecca Long Bailey. Can't get face-to-face. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to know about it. So what's the constituent supposed to do then? What are they left with? Chance encounters. Chance encounters when they see one of these people across the street, so they scream abuse at them. I talked about it on Thursday, about conflict resolution in the working class. Right. I got a few laughs. It wasn't supposed to be funny. Oh, these are mad times. Let's move on. Race is everywhere. Race, 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 race. Minority staff and presenters at the BBC have been told by the corporation they are not to join in any form of protest supporting the breakfast presenter Naga Munchetti. So the BBC has told its staff, do not join in a protest supporting Munchetti. Munchetti was rebuked by the BBC for saying that the US President Donald Trump is racist, basically. You'll remember that Trump called for a group of female Democrats to go back to their own countries. Remember that? Okay, Ocasio-Cortez and others. He told go back to your own countries. Stupid, moronic tweet by Trump. So she was on the BBC Breakfast programme, which is on BBC One in the mornings. It's a news programme. BBC, which has got very strict guidelines for its presenters and its producers when it comes to opining on things. They are supposed to maintain impartiality at all times. Now, they don't. You and I both know they don't, but they're supposed to. They are supposed to read the news, not comment on it. Okay, and not invest in the story. Their own feelings on it. She got stuck into it. She was asked by her co-presenter, Dan Walker, I think, about it, and she kind of went in on Trump and said that it was embedded in racism. So the BBC upheld a complaint against her, and presumably they've warned her in the future, just stick to the copy, love. Just stick to the copy. It's on the fucking auto cue. Just read it. Tell people that Donald Trump said, go back to your own homes, and then tell people the Democratic congresswomen said that Donald was racist. That is the news. That's how the news used to be. Good morning, I'm Naga Munchetti. Four Democratic congresswomen have labelled the president a racist after he tweeted at them to go back to their own countries. That's it. That's the fucking copy on the order queue. You've done your job now. Move on to the next story. But she didn't move on to the next story. She opined. And celebrities, A-list and Z-list, like Lenny Henry, who hasn't been funny since fucking 1984, have come out and said, it's outrageous. She should be able to say what she likes. Well, no. No. If you want her to be able to say what she likes, don't call it BBC News. Tell the truth. Be honest about it. And call it a commentary programme. Call it a magazine programme. And let your listeners know, or your viewers know in this case, that the presenters are going to be offering their own opinions. Is it understandable that Munchetti, as a minority, might get annoyed by people being told to go back to their own countries? Yes, of course it's understandable. Of course it is. I'm sure she's been told that herself. I'm sure black people have been told from time to time, and Asians, Pakistanis and Indians, and Sikhs. I'm sure they've been told by fucking Egypts to go back to their own countries. I'm sure they have. But you're on the BBC, love. Put a fucking cork in it. Not your business to be telling people what to think about stories. Just give them the story and move on. Rachel Shabby is a journalist. She was on Sky News last night. She totally disagrees with me and agrees with the clamour, the growing petition in terms of the BBC should withdraw its policy towards Naga Munchetti and should not uphold the complaint that she failed to be impartial. Here's Rachel Shabby. Race is everywhere.
So she's the latest in a series of people actually to have just called out the BBC and said, listen, the BBC's decision to uphold a complaint against Naga Manchetti for calling out Donald Trump's racism. She's saying, look, you've just got it wrong.
Not up to her to call out Donald Trump's racism. She is a news presenter for the BBC. She's not there to call anything out. She's there to tell you the facts, ma'am. Four women called him a racist because he said go back to your own homes. Not up to her then to opine about that in any way, shape or form, right?
Wrong. And you do risk being coming across as out of touch. Of course, we had lots of broadcasters last week write a letter, including people like Sir Lenny Henry and Afua Hirsch, saying that...
Fucking Lenny Henry.
...that they support Naga Manchetti and just...
Tony Hall emailed staff as well to say racism's racism, didn't he? But on the other hand, this complaint's been upheld.
Yeah, which I think was the wrong decision. And I think the BBC is getting increasingly more and more people complain about this decision, which seems to imply that racism is somehow a matter of opinion rather than an objective fact. And I do think, you know, it's personally, I think they're going to have to... row back on this. They're going to have to climb down, not just because of this case specifically, but because of the tone and the context that it is setting for all the other staff who have to work at the BBC, including BAME staff.
You see, that's very worrying. She said the BBC has to accept that racism isn't a matter of opinion, it's an objective fact. But that's nonsense. A racism allegation, at its genesis, at its outset, is subjective. It's a matter of opinion, what constitutes racism. Don't get me wrong now. Many times, somebody will say something and it will be racist. Or there will be times when somebody will observe something and it will be racist. But at the outset, it is subjective. It is a matter of opinion, what constitutes racism. And no BBC presenter or ITV news presenter or Channel 4 news presenter should be editorialising on any of these issues. It's their job to say, this happened, this person said this, that person said that, make sure you've got both sides of it, let the audience make their mind up and move on. Of course it's subjective, what constitutes racism and what doesn't. Not better demonstrated, I don't think, than in this furore over the two Man City players, best pals, Benjamin Mendy and his pal Bernardo Silva, who sent him a tweet that people have called racism and racist, but yet the subject of the tweet, the black player Benjamin Mendy, he said, I don't find anything racist about it at all. Of course it's subjective and it's a matter of opinion, and news and commentary are two different things, but they've blurred the lines over the years so successfully that you can't even see the line in the sand anymore now. What we used to get outraged about years ago, I used to talk on programmes, donkeys years ago, I used to talk on programmes about Roger Ailes and Fox News, and we used to rage about what Fox News was doing. But now they're all doing it, disguising commentary as news, presenting to you commentary and a point of view, but presenting it as a news programme. They're all at it now. The BBC. A number of you are on Twitter there talking about the BBC's coverage of Syria. Absolutely. They're all doing it. It's in the copy. I'm saying to Manchetti, read the copy, but it's often in the copy. The regime, man, when referring to Syria. The regime when talking about Iran. The regime. You know? I think it's been a long time since the world, well, at least the Western world, has had news programmes that were simply objective, non-editorialising news programmes. When did we have them? Did we have them even in my lifetime? I think we do. I remember watching RTE News growing up as a boy and in my early teens. And facts were read out, or at least what they were told were facts. And then you got to make your own mind up. Anyway, let's move on before we run out of time. Had this from Jean Ann this morning. Cancel culture. An actress who was given a big gig in a stage version of The Colour Purple, massive gig, and an actress who'd previously been successful, Her name is Sami Omuba. I think it's, no, excuse me, it's S-E-Y, so it's Sei Omuba. Black actress, and she was given a lead role in a stage version of The Colour Purple. Big gig for her, but she's been on the up and up, this actress, and was thrilled about it. But she's just been fired. She's been taken out of the production, and presumably somebody else has been put in, because of a Facebook post from 5 years ago, where she quoted the Bible. And it was about homosexuality. So she got the lead role in The Colour Purple, and one day later, a Facebook post was presented, and she was sacked and labelled a homophobe. This is 6 months ago, by the way, and she's suing now, suing the production company, saying that she's the victim of religious discrimination. And she spoke to the Mail on Sunday yesterday and said that her career is basically finished. She doesn't even get to do auditions anymore. She doesn't get invited to auditions. So in March of this year, she auditioned for the musical of The Colour Purple, got the role. This is Alice Walker's book, of course. I think Whoopi Goldberg might have played the part in the film, which I think Oprah was in as well. Next day, she got a screenshot of a Facebook post sent to her by tweet from September 2014. And basically, this led to her being kicked out of the role. The guy who went after her was a guy called Aaron Lee Lambert. He stars in the West End production of Hamilton. He objected to her views because the character of Seeley is seen by some as being gay. And in his tweet to Sei Omuba, he says, "Do you still stand by this post, or are you happy to remain a hypocrite? Seeing as you've now been announced to be playing an LGBTQ character, I think you owe your LGBTQ peers an explanation immediately." Her agent rang her the following day, said, "You're fired and don't speak to the media. Keep your head down." On Facebook, she was in a discussion 5 years ago. She's a Christian woman, and she wrote, "It's clearly evident in Corinthians 1, 6, 9, 11, whatever the chapter is, what the Bible says on the matter. I do not believe you can be born gay, and I do not believe homosexuality is right," she said. And what they infer is that's hateful. And what they infer is that she can't have that opinion in the 21st century. And what they infer is that despite she's a brilliant actress, and she must be, that she's now not suitable to play the part, because they infer that the audience wouldn't be happy knowing that a cast member has such an antiquated and ancient opinion of homosexuality. This is fucking terrifying stuff, this. And it's happening all over the place. And this is why I keep saying to you, if you're going for a gig, if you're applying for jobs, fucking delete everything you've ever said or ever done. And you might not have tweeted about homosexuality. You might not have tweeted about Brexit. You might not have tweeted about gender identity. But anything you said in the past can and will be used against you in this mad paradigm we exist in, where people, virtue signalers, go trolling people's accounts of yesteryear to out them in the 21st century as some fucking hate monger who isn't fit to live amongst us. You know, not fit to be living amongst us, not fit to be working, not fit to be in the production of The Colour Purple, because 5 years ago, the person honestly gave an opinion, honestly said, "Well, this is how I feel." Do you think gays and lesbians around the world are under any fucking threat because some conservative Christian woman says, "I don't think gayness is right"? Do you think so? Do you think that represents a clear and present danger to gay men and women around the world? An opinion? Of course it doesn't. But it doesn't matter. It does not matter in this era of trial by social media. This era of faux outrage. And worse again, it's not coming from a gay bloke or a lesbian woman, is it? No, it's coming from a third. I'm taking offence on behalf of a third party because they need to be protected by me. Where are the gay men and women that we grew up with who fought for gay rights when they were in genuine peril when they went out and about? Where's Peter Tatchell, who fucking pisses me off as the days go on. This man I've known for years and interviewed for years. Where is he, Tatchell? Where are the gay men and women who fought for free speech and freedom of expression? Where are they now? Where are the gay leaders, if they exist, coming out and saying, ah, for fuck's sake, leave that woman alone. She's an actress, for fuck's sake. She's going to be doing The Colour Purple. What difference does it make what she thinks about me? I couldn't give a shit what she thinks about me. But Tatchell gave himself away the last time he was on the Richie Allen show, didn't he? 3 months ago, when I tore into him about when he said it's not okay to think like that in the 21st century. He didn't say it's not okay to say it. It's not okay to think it, he said. Why isn't it okay to think it? You can think what you want, right? Right? Dreadful. Girl's career is in ruins because she's a devout Christian and she has the temerity to say things like, well, I don't believe you can be born gay and I don't believe homosexuality is right. What are we going to do about it? Who'd be a child in the 21st century? I'm going over, but only for a couple of minutes. Who'd be a child in the 21st century? Big story today about the lack of donors for children. There's a big issue. Waiting lists for organs, for young folks. The waiting lists are getting longer because children are not on donor lists. Big problem. So the NHS has found that there are 192 children in the UK waiting for an organ transplant. And out of those 192, a quarter of them need a heart. But they said doctors today that in their own profession, doctors are reluctant to raise the issue of organ donation with families whose children are dying. So families, sadly, of course, as we speak, have children who are dying. Might be on life support, right? And according to the NHS, doctors are reluctant to raise this issue with their parents. Understandably. Jesus. The child is there. The parents are coming to terms with the child on life support. Doctors don't want to be saying, hey, listen, have you thought about organ donation? Understandably, right? But that's a problem, says the NHS. But it's also a problem that families are not talking to children to ask them if they want to be donors. Yes. It's a big problem, we were told today, that parents are not sitting down with their very young children to talk to them about dying and about whether or not they want to donate their organs. This is not a joke. What a time to be a child, eh? Go to school, eh? Drag queen story time. Let's have a bit of drag queen story time. Then let's have a discussion about which gender you are, because you might be one of 100. Put away your math books now. It's time to talk about self-touching. And when you get home, we want your parents to talk to you about the fact that there's a chance that you might die very young, and we need to talk about what we do with your organs. And again, there's something resonating here with 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, because it's 5 and 6-year-olds they want to talk to. Let's talk to them about organ donation. Here's Angie Scales. She's a lead NHS nurse, and she was in Sky News studios this morning and spoke about this.
I mean, we're asking families to make a decision at what is an incredibly difficult time for them. Huge personal grief and facing the death of a child. But actually, they talk very much about the positive element of donation and the gift of donation that gives them subsequently after the death and how proud they feel of their child at that time.
Obviously, death is not something that you want to talk about. But do you think organ donation should be something that parents should be talking about to their children?
Feel of their child at that time.
Yeah, let's go back. I just brought that back a bit. She said, the presenter, death isn't something you want to be talking to your children about. From what I understand, not being a parent, but having grown up as a child, having known parents of children and watched parents and how they approach certain issues with children, it's my understanding that usually the first time a parent discusses death with a child is when you've got the unfortunate circumstances of a pet dying or the unfortunate circumstances, even more unfortunate, of a relative dying like a grandparent or an uncle or an aunt. That's when it's introduced to a child. Or the impending death of somebody. You know, somebody's got a terminal illness. Then you have a chat with the child then about what's going to happen. It's a natural thing is what I'm trying to say. But they want now people to be introducing the concept of death to a child, but not the death of a relative or the death of Fluffy the bunny or Spot the dog. No, your death. And what we might do with your organs. This is mad stuff.
Obviously, death is not something that you want to talk about. But do you think organ donation should be something that parents should be talking about to their children?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if we're talking about organ donation, we need to involve children in those discussions. And actually, parents...
We need to involve children in those discussions. That is insane. And yet it is said so glibly, isn't it? Isn't it? Wow. Let's involve children in the discussions of organ donation and death.
Parents find it very difficult to discuss death. I do as a parent. But children actually are much more open to talking about these things. And we know that children as young as five have actually openly discussed what they want when they may die. And then later that decision is much easier for their parents.
Yeah, let's talk about children. Let's talk with children about dying young, because let's terrify the absolute bejesus out of youngsters and get them thinking about death on top of everything else that they're now being asked to consider. And let's tell them it's a real possibility, you know. It's unlikely, but it's a possibility. And maybe you should fill out this donor card. What sort of nightmares do you think it's going to give children? That's a matter for the parents of any child. You should never talk to a child about organ donation or death. And if, in the very remote, you know, possibilities, if it does happen to you, God forbid it ever happens to you or anybody you know, that a child dies, well, let the parent decide then on what they do with the child's organs. But don't introduce the concept of death and organ donation to children. It's just mad. Right, that's it for me. Overtime today. I'm going to go. I'll be back with you tomorrow in the AM for the newspaper review show. In the meantime, it's wet and miserable in Greater Manchester. I don't know about the rest of the UK, but do enjoy the rest of your Sunday and spend some time with some loved ones. Spend some time not thinking about some of this mad stuff as well, right? That's what I would advise. I'm going out with the boss today and Hello Sunshine from his latest album, because I think it's a lovely song. Hello.